Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello and welcome to Nature Now for the first week of October 2018. I'm your host, Paul Rubin. Today, I will be talking with the Executive Director and Conservation Director of the Jefferson Land Trust, Richard Tucker and Sarah Spaeth. Thank you both for coming on to the show today.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Great. Well, let's move on to our mystery sound. A hint, these birds are residents within specific areas throughout our region and can be seen scratching at the ground in large groups or dashing forward with blurred legs. So very fast. They also have a very distinct topknot of feathers projecting from their head, which should be the easiest trait to identify them. I see them frequently on short trips to Fort Casey and Coopville. And I wanted to just do this real quick, but can you give us a brief background of how you guys got into your roles at the Jefferson Land Trust and your history there?
Well, I've been with the Land Trust a little over 3 years. I had lived up in the Northwest for 20 years, moved south, and could not wait to come back to the Northwest, which I consider home. And I've been doing conservation work my entire career, which spans over 35 years. And when I saw an opportunity in Port Townsend, which is a part of the state I've always really admired and loved coming up here, I applied. And as fate happened, I became director 3 years ago, July.
Congrats.
And we're really excited to have him. I have been with the Land Trust for 22 years now and grew up in the Northwest and felt a really strong affinity for the wild places of the Northwest. And when I started to have a family, really wanted to do something that would help preserve special places for my kids into the future. And so shifted my career of being a baker and cook on boats to working in the land conservation field after getting a master's in coastal zone management, and have been at it ever since in various different roles with the Land Trust. And I'm still really happy to be doing this work with the community and the great staff.
Great. Sarah was our first employee at the Land Trust 22 years ago.
Congrats on your three-year almost anniversary, you said?
A little over three years.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a very important role, and we're, as a community, very happy to have you two specifically in, you know, in that role. So before we get onto our interview portion of the show, we're just going to go over observations and news. So I had the opportunity to hike the summit of Mount Zion on Sunday, which sounds strenuous, but is actually the easiest summit throughout the Olympics. With the changing colors of vine, Rocky Mountain, and big leaf maple, it was clear that autumn was in full swing. With a brisk breeze and the sun shimmering through the misty clouds, we walked cautiously along the ridge of Mount Zion. Besides the scenery, the most notable observation was a friendly gray jay panhandling his way closer and closer to us for an easy snack. Fortunately, those snacks had already been eaten. It was a great moment to wave goodbye to what may be the last warm day of the year.
So last week, the Port Townsend Marine Science Center had their annual conservation breakfast, and it also happens to be the time when the Eleanor Stops Award, Environmental Award, is awarded. And this year's recipients were Dr. Eloise Kalin and Sarah Doyle from the North Olympic Salmon Coalition. Eleanor Stops was the woman who worked tirelessly for over a decade to turn Protection Island into a national wildlife refuge in 1982. 99-year-old Enzquim resident Dr. Eloise Kalin was a pivotal voice in prevention of the impacts to the Miller's Peninsula and waters offshore Protection Island. Sarah Doyle is the stewardship coordinator for the North Olympic Salmon Coalition and is the youngest recipient of the Eleanor Stops Award. I happen to be very fortunate to also have been a recipient of this award, and am just really excited about Sarah representing the next generation of stewards. And she had a powerful message to share with the breakfast participants. So this marks the first year that the award was given to two honorees.
Wow, and the oldest and the youngest at the same time.
Yeah.
Pretty special.
Yeah, it was great.
Four transient orcas were spotted off the coast of Kingston on September 24th. There was one big male observed feeding on the Kingston side of the mid-channel before heading east. over 5 sightings have been confirmed of a Phae nopepala phaea by birders in Clallam County, a crested songbird of the deserts and arid woodlands of southwestern United States. Phae nopepala phaea are a rare species to travel to the Pacific Northwest. These birds are particularly notable for their enigmatic pattern of breeding twice each year in 2 different habitats. Sightings have been reported in Carlsberg in the elderberry tree behind the house selling rocks, as reported by birders. Another notable rare sighting is a yellow-billed loon off of Protection Island in Jefferson County. On to the interview portion of our show today. Can you guys give us just the basics? What is a land trust and how does it work?
A land trust is an organization. Most of them are 501c3 nonprofit organizations that work to conserve land that is important for a community. In this community, it's our working forests, working farms, and our habitat lands. We have an organization called the Land Trust Alliance, in which is our land trusts from all around the country, which come together to share information, to help us with advocacy. But many communities have land trusts. They work with different tools, and we have a toolbox of our very own that we pull from for whatever property we're trying to conserve or what's the appropriate method to conserve the property. But most of us are community grassroots organizations that work to preserve the places that matter.
Great. Would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah. So Richard mentioned the conservation toolbox, and the most common tools that we use are either purchase of lands for preserves, but more commonly, the conservation easement is a tool that we use. And that's a legal agreement that runs with the deed to the land forever. And it's created with each individual landowner to address the landowner's needs, but also protect the conservation values that are on that property. And it's a voluntary agreement that gets into drilling down on those special conservation values that each property has.
In 1987, the summer chum population was decimated in Lower Chimicum Creek. Did this have a significant impact on the local community and give rise to the Jefferson Land Trust mission?
It most definitely did. The Land Trust has been around since 1989, and so we were approaching our 30th anniversary. And one of our first projects that we took on was the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, but then we moved into help with several partner organizations, help bring back the salmon to Chimicum Creek. Mm-hmm. It was a wake-up call, I think, for the community that some of our natural resources and some of the amenities that we all appreciate was being lost. And so it definitely helped shape a mission, especially with our habitat work. Yeah. Surrounding salmon.
Yeah, and I'll just add that that was really the beginning of some great partnerships that we've helped to create over the years. And the first partnership was what we call the Chum Sorsham after the summer chum salmon. Mm-hmm. And with partners like the Conservation District, North Olympic Salmon Coalition, Department of Fish and Wildlife, WSU, and others, we've really been able to be strategic about how we go about salmon habitat protection and then restoration that follows. So it's been a very effective partnership that's been in place for, gosh, probably 17 years now, and has led to some other partnerships that have been really effective as well.
And You can see the results by seeing the returning salmon on Chimicum Creek.
Yeah. Yeah. And I personally got to see that result, and it was breathtaking, you know. I really enjoyed that. So, and Sarah, you've been with the organization for 2 decades, so you've really seen it grow and blossom into what it is today.
Yeah, and I just think that those partnerships have been so important to our collective conservation work here. You know, that original Chimicum Creek situation, that's what we all rallied around initially. Mm-hmm. But that same partnership then moved on to working in the salmon and snow watersheds, down in, in other watersheds all throughout East Jefferson County. So sometimes there are various other partnerships that come into those, come to play in those different watersheds. But it's been really a great demonstration.
It's kind of like a top-down kind of thing, you know, ecological terms, like the apex predator down. But in this case, like salmon was the, you know, keystone thing that brought everyone together. And then since then, just blossomed into all the protection and habitat that you guys protect. Today.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And our salmon habitat work is just one example of the different work that we do where we bring in partners. Our working farms projects are always with a number of state and local and federal partners.
Yeah.
Likewise, with our working force, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so we can't succeed in our work without our partners. They're different depending upon what projects we work on, but they're very important to us.
Great. Can you briefly describe the process of designating a property to be important for conservation?
We have what we call our conservation plan that lays out our conservation vision for Jefferson County. And we then go have another step where we have our conservation projects committee, where someone comes to us and says, I have a piece of property I'd like to protect, or here's a piece of property I think the land trust should look at protecting. We have a series of lenses that we look at the property through, habitat value, whether it's a working landscape. There's a whole list of lenses we have to review the property through. It goes to this conservation projects committee, which is pretty unique in the fact that it's made up of board members, staff, and community volunteers. Many organizations have a similar type of organization, but it's mainly just staff and board. We actually bring in community volunteers and rely upon their expertise and their passion for land conservation to help us vet these projects mm-hmm. and review them to make a recommendation to the board whether or not we should pursue conversations or additional work on the project.
Yeah. So the public is really involved from the beginning.
Public is involved, and the public was very involved in that 100-year vision that came together as our conservation plan. So that really looks at the forest lands, the farmland, the recreation lands, and the habitat lands. And that public involvement helped us come up with some actions that would get us toward preserving the important places that fall under those categories. So that's kind of the big filter that we're operating under. But as Richard mentioned, the other criteria that the Conservation Projects Committee looks at really helps us determine whether it's a project that we feel has enough conservation value for our tools that we have in our toolbox. Mm-hmm. And then we also really look to funding sources for their vetting process, because in many cases, people are saying, I have land, or I want to sell you a conservation easement where you're actually buying some of the rights to the property. And so when we're getting public funding, they have criteria that we also have to use as a filter to see if this property will fit and be worthy of ranking well in those grant programs.
Yeah. And I also want to mention the fact that we only work with willing landowners, and that's what most land trusts, almost all land trusts do. You have to have somebody who's willing to talk to you and willing to talk about maybe their vision for the property before we can proceed. And we also, as an accredited land trust, through the Land Trust Accreditation Commission, have certain standards and practices we have to follow in order to receive this seal of approval, that all our business practices, our conservation practices, all our documents have been reviewed by our peer organizations and found to be not only adequate, but comply with the updated standards and practices of the industry.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to just really honor the landowners that are saying, hey, we want to work with you. We want to leave a legacy of something for future generations. And so that's often the starting point, is a landowner or a project partner coming to us and saying, hey, you know, we think this fits. Do you guys agree? And then, you know, it can take a number of years to actually make one of these projects happen. But we really rely on the landowners' interest and willingness in working with us.
Well, it's very personal, you know, the relationship. And you know that they have this bond with the property that they've either lived at or owned for probably a long time. And a lot of this is agricultural area, like I think you, Richard, mentioned. Or, you know, I've seen a lot of, you know, Chimicum is the best example, I think, in maybe in our local area of, you know, agriculture and living practices with the conservation associated with it, and just how well it does, you know, the Chimicum Creek being the result, you know, so far. And I really, such a great relationship to have that with the property owner itself and not have to go through a third party or anything, but just direct. And I think everybody wins from that. It's very democratic, actually, too, to have the volunteers involved. You know, I think our producer, Nan Evans, is actually on the board with the land trust. And
that's correct.
Well, the one thing about when we purchase an easement from a landowner, we have a long-term relationship moving forward with the landowner because they still own the land. And so we have a monitoring obligation to go out and make sure that the easement is being respected and what was agreed upon is being carried forward. So it's one thing to purchase a property, but when you purchase an easement, you retain this relationship with the landowner moving forward.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. Can you give me any flagship conservation projects that the Land Trust has directed?
Oh, that's a tough question to answer. But I have to say, for me personally, having been involved in the projects for so long, it's been really gratifying to be involved in these habitat projects. And Chimicum is obviously a shining example of that. But one of my favorite places is the Duckabush River. And we've worked with a number of interesting partners there to preserve properties on the north side and pretty significant swath of land on the south side, which creates a 1,000-foot buffer from about the power line reach almost all the way up to the National Forest Service land. And it's just a magical place with lots of wildlife habitat and wildlife sign there, which is one of my latest passions, is reading the landscape for signs of wildlife. But the salmon, when the salmon come back up the rivers, they are essentially providing a feast to all of these other creatures. Yeah. So it's just rich in that way. But when the Land Trust changed its mission to include working lands, working farmland and working forest land, that was a really big deal for us. And that farms and forests portion of our mission has really brought some incredible landowner relations and community participation in our work. And so many farms that we've helped protect have, each one has a unique story. And it's just really wonderful to see the role that the Land Trust has played in helping rebirth the agricultural economy and culture in East Jefferson County. But I also have to say that we're quite excited about the working forest landscape and the notion of making local forest products and community forests as kind of as sexy as local food from local farms is. And so working on the Chimicum Forest Project and ultimately the Chimicum Ridge Project is going to be our biggest project ever. And we're excited to be working with EcoTrust Forest Management, who's the bridge landowner of Chimicum Ridge now. But we received an appropriation from the Washington State Legislature earlier this year to purchase a working forest easement on that property, which will guarantee a different kind of management protocol, not industrial management, but one that allows for selective thinning over time and also protects wildlife habitat and aquifer recharge and carbon sequestration, et cetera. So it's a demonstration pilot project for a carbon program for the state. And so that's really exciting. And it ties in with the 65-acre piece next door to the west that we're planning on purchasing in mid-November that will be ultimately the gateway to the ridge when we hopefully purchase that in 2023.
And the ridge is 850 acres, so total
pretty significant.
910 acre community forest in Chimicum with a variety of recreation, educational, water quality, habitat values, as well as a local source of sustainable timber.
Yeah, and I think it's just important for the community to know that this is kind of a multi-phased project and we're not done yet. We won't be done really until 2023 when we hope to be able to afford to buy the ridge from the current bridge owner. But meanwhile, we're buying this piece in between and engaging the community on that. So really, really exciting to be moving up the watershed from the fish to the farms, now to the forests.
And my background's in wetlands, and I know that, you know, you move up and it's all really important because it all comes down, you know, into the sink. And Chimicum Valley is a really important place. And if you can get to the source and conserve that before it becomes a problem or before there are nutrients or any other issues with creek itself, then you have salmon and you have other animals that eat it, or, you know, it just has a bigger effect. And getting up is just as important as below. And that brings up another project that is on my mind, something that I was somewhat part of at the beginning when it was being organized. But there's a property on Maristone Island, an undeveloped parcel, in the smack middle of Maristone, kind of near Mystery Bay. But I know that that's actually a goal of the land trust at the moment. And yeah, can you just talk about that for a moment?
We've been really busy this summer with with several projects underway. Yeah. And this project came to us. It was on our radar for years after a community group on Maristone worked with the land trust about 10 years ago.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. The years are slipping by.
To identify properties that were important to the community. And it's a 51-acre piece of property. It's in two parts. One is on the bluff. There's a parcel across the street. It's 46 acres of wetlands and natural habitat. And the community was interested in conserving it, so we just went under contract to purchase it. We will be closing later this month on that property. What we have seen, it's a wonderful piece of property, and it will have great value as an education place, people to go out and take small walks and just visit this wonderful piece of property. We've undertaken a community fundraising campaign, a very public community fundraising campaign that has pretty much shocked us all at the Land Trust. Yeah. I'm an optimistic person. But the response from the community and beyond, from Seattle and Port Townsend and even as far away as New York State, people contributing to raise money for this project has been very gratifying.
Yeah, I mean, I remember how many volunteers showed up just for this small meeting. You know, the room was packed, and I just remember the enthusiasm going forward for it. You know, it's a really important area. I know that it's right, like we said, in the middle, and it kind of could be a corridor for, you know, it's a shoreline project. So there's a lot of habitats here for this overall property. And I just know how many people came together for it to do this initial biological survey. And I'm glad to know that you guys are getting close to actually purchasing it and conserving it. I think there's going to be a lot of trails that could be open there for the public.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the goals, is to be able to provide some trails systems to get people onto the property or cross the property from East Maristone Road to Fort Flagler Road.
Yeah.
But also maybe the opportunity to view the wetland and do bird watching and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're planning on engaging community members to help us determine how to conserve the important conservation values of the property at the same time creating some trails to allow people to be on the property. So we want to find this balance, and we're looking to folks to help us make those decisions on how best to do both. So that's going to be happening sometime in the first part of the new year. And we hope to get some trails, or get a trail at least initially
built.
Bird
tower? There's a bird tower, maybe? Or is that just kind of an idea?
You know, there are all kinds of ideas that are floating around. And, and that's why we want to get people together to talk about, well, what can we really afford to do? What makes sense while really making sure that we're protecting the habitat values?
Yeah.
What kind of trails do we want to build? Where should they be located to minimize that impact and that kind of stuff? Those are all the questions that are still out there, but definitely want the public to enjoy it. And, and we know there's a lot of enthusiasm on the island for getting onto the land and seeing this become a really valuable preserve.
Well, what's been really amazing is when the word got out that we were under contract to buy this property, we had a number of volunteers step up to say, I want to host a house party. I want to talk to my neighbors. I want you to come out and meet these people who help us not just raise the money, but also we had a really dedicated core of people who said, what can we do to really help the land trust with this property? And the idea of the biological survey came up, and the community volunteers ran with that and put together a really wonderful report, which highlights the different types of species that are out there on the property. That's going to help us when we put together a management plan. But this was all done by volunteers on their own time because they cared about the property and cared about the island. And so it's one thing that being here 3 years, I never had a lot of contact with Maristone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really shown me what a wonderful community is out there and how dedicated they are to conservation and protecting places out there that mean something to that community. And also the historical roots that I've learned about the different families out there on Maristone has been fun for me as a genealogist.
Yeah, and to be a resident of Maristone Island, there's a book about it. There's, you know, like there's a lot of history there from all the families. And just to summarize the very well-written report that was put out by volunteers, multiple habitats, there's a pond right in the center, mature upland forest, young forest coming up, most likely alders. And there's a bluff. I'm just reading it right now, but so many plant species, animal species that, you know, could be protected. And I think, I hope we're on the way to doing that, because being there, you know, it's always great to have another place to hike and bird, and the diversity of habitats definitely adds that to your, you know, if you're bird, your list, or, you know, whatever you like to do, just another little day trail for most people, but we all like it whether you live there or not. All right, so I know that there's an actual goal to reach in the coming week. Is it October 8th that this is kind of like the deadline for obtaining this property?
We're scheduled to close on the 15th.
Oh, the 15th. Okay, so you have a little bit more time.
But we're hoping to close our fundraising by a week from October 8th.
Okay.
Our goal was $200,000. Mm-hmm. Dollars to raise to bring us to where we need to be, and we are within range of doing that. And so this week is crucial to bring any gifts that people want to give, mm-hmm. who are maybe sitting on the fence or sitting back and waiting. Go ahead and get your gift in now, because we want to declare victory next week.
Yeah.
We thank everyone so much. The community response to this has been enormous and really exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, and how much percent left, just to kind of give listeners an idea?
Less than 5%.
Oh, so close. Yeah, it's really coming down the time. But I feel good about it. I feel optimistic. Great. Well, just to keep that running, I think that will end our interview for this evening. Thank you guys for the interview portion. Let's move on to the mystery sound revealed. That was a song of the California quail. California quails spend most of their time on the ground, walking and scratching in search of food. In the morning and evening, they forage beneath shrubs or on open ground near cover. They usually travel in groups called covoys. Their flight is explosive, but lasts just long enough to reach cover. For those who have come across a quail hiding there in the brush, you'll know that they make a very startling scene to seek safety. I've personally startled a few and, you know, I thought I was getting shot, so they're pretty quick and loud. You'll find California quail in chaparral, sagebrush, oak woodlands, and foothill forests of California in the Northwest. They're very tolerant of people and can be common in the city parks, suburban gardens, and agricultural areas. Thank you to Cornell Lab of Ornithology Lab's Macaulay Library for these sound recordings and descriptions. For upcoming events, Sarah, do you just want to start us off?
October marks the 6th anniversary of the founding of the Land Trust Natural History Society. Join the Natural History Society on Wednesday, October 10th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. for a morning exploring the wild and rewilding pathways of Cappy's Trails in the Quimper Wildlife Corridor. The hike is guided by our preserve steward, Kathy Darrow, who will guide the group through a healing landscape with the help of volunteers after over 100 years of colonization. RSVP to Nan at jltnatural@saveland.org. Thank you to contributors Wendy Feltham and David Rue of the Natural History Society newsletter for this information.
All right, so that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have any comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ 91.9 FM, on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m. and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. We have everything we need, and I will care
for you, 'cause you care for me. Your host for this week of Nature Now was Paul Rubens. This show was edited by Alex Henley. It's more good to do, good to do. And what I have could be a message, or just some words.
my heart, my respect to the ones making changes.